Good afternoon. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Now, today we're going to talk about water in Anchorage. We're talking outdoor recreational water in Anchorage. For Alaskans, these summer months are much anticipated. The snow melts and we look forward to some nice long days, hopefully warm and sunny, to fish, go boating, garden, and recreate in and around water that is no longer frozen. We're hauling out the canoes and the fishing poles, the waders, the kayaks. We're tossing balls in the lakes for our dogs to swim out and fetch. And on really hot days, we might even go for a dip in a local creek. So just how healthy are these local lakes and creeks? One place to start is this. Where does the water in our creeks come from? You might be surprised to learn that stormwater and runoff from Anchorage streets goes right into our creeks. So what effect does that have, and what can we do about it? So we're going to find out all about this from a couple of experts we've got on the show with us today in the studio. I'd like to welcome Sherry Northen. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Sherry is the executive director for the Anchorage Waterways Council. And Tim Stevens is with the DEC. I think you're called a water...
An environmental program specialist.
And, okay, nice jargon there for us. So environmental program specialist. And anyway, they both have extensive backgrounds in water and monitoring it and knowing what's in it. And I thought this time of year, when we're just about to, you know, burst out and want to go out and be out, what does it look like in our creeks? And we play in our creeks, we fish in our creeks, we boat in our creeks. So I wanted to tell this one story, which was years ago I took from Gary King Sports Shop a windsurfing class out on Westchester Lagoon. And I didn't get sick, and nobody in my class that I know got sick, but the next year we didn't have, it wasn't possible. So I have a feeling that that might reflect the changing quality of our water. And I'm not trying to indict Westchester Lagoon by any means, but I thought maybe we could, I want to invite people who are listening to the show. Maybe you have these same kind of questions. You wonder, is it okay if I take my kids down to Goose Lake and let them swim there? Or should I take some precautions? Or, what am I maybe doing that is actually contributing to this problem if you didn't know that water is running right down your driveway after you've washed your car right into our storm drains? Or maybe you think that putting clippings in the water is actually an organic thing to do. You know, I mean, there may be some things that your average homeowner citizen just doesn't really even know. So I thought I'd start by giving out the phone number. So if people do have questions, they can call, because we've got two great experts here. Give us a call at 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. And you can call from around the state at 1-888-353-5752. And we'll also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I wanted to start really with the Anchorage Waterways Council. I know I've lived in Anchorage for a long time, long enough to do windsurfing in Westchester Lagoon. And I've sort of heard about it, but I didn't know if it was a government agency or, you know, is it an all-volunteer agency? What is its mission? And so, Sherry, I'd just like you to tell us that.
Well, thank you. I think we need to get that information out. And we don't seem to have a lot of people in Anchorage's 300,000 person population that know that we exist. They seem to find me when we have a problem.
They know, they call you when they see something they don't like.
And so we've been around for, it'll be 30 years next year. And it was started by a group of concerned citizens because of the way the waterways were being treated, I think particularly before we had a lot of regulations and restrictions on construction. The mission of the Waterways Council is to protect, restore, and enhance the waterways, wetlands, and associated uplands of Anchorage's creeks. And Anchorage municipality is 2,000 square miles. So it not only includes those in the bowl, that we are most familiar with, but all the way down to Girdwood, Glacier Creek, Portage Creek, and then out to Eklutna.
Okay. And it's my understanding that you have had the mission of monitoring water with volunteers.
Yes. We started that in 1998 with actually a fellow who's on our board right now, Bob Shipley, was one of the first, and he decided he'd go out in February and start up a monitoring program. And he...
You have to do ice chipping to get
there. Probably. All of Chester Creek tends to stay open year-round.
That's true.
Yeah. One of the few, which is interesting. But he went out and started with a few tests. And over the years, we were actually funded by DEC to do... It's a volunteer monitoring program. We train the volunteers for 12 hours, give them the kits, the supplies, and recertify them every year. And
Still going on now?
It's still going on, but unfortunately, we are no longer funded to the level that we were by DEC. There was a philosophical thought that volunteers may not have the best data, and it was a lot of money going into it, and I think the state keeps cutting them down.
So. And so the question is the monitoring, and jump in here, Tim, is the monitoring still going on? If it's not being done by volunteers, it's being done by?
It's still being done by volunteers. It is totally funded by the Waterways Council, by membership or a membership organization, and if we can find funding through grants or donors. But we're having to cut it back. We monitor typically 16 times a year, four of the summer months, twice a month, but we've cut those back. One of the problems being shipping supplies, hazardous chemicals up from the lower 48 is extremely expensive and often costs more than the chemicals.
And so these are the hazardous chemicals are what you're using to test the water?
Some of them for the tests for dissolved oxygen and some of the other things. Okay. They're not all hazardous, but they have to go to the air.
That's a kind of scary sound to it.
Yeah, we put hazardous chemicals in the water. No.
No. Actually, I want folks to get a chance to meet you and know what your backgrounds are, because I did describe you as savvy water scientists on the promo. So, Sherry, tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll go to Tim.
Okay. I used to live in California and went to UC Berkeley, got all my degrees there, including a doctorate in geography. So we kind of look at the world very holistically. We don't just pick on one little aspect like water, but we would look at topography and policy and all sorts of things that would impact.
What's upstream affects what's downstream.
Yeah, and how people view it and what rules are out there. And so it's like I said, very holistic. And then I moved up here in 99 and taught at UAA for a while. I'm also a cartographer and started working at the Waterways Council doing educational outreach, which I enjoyed.
Would you describe engaging the public in these environmental issues as a passion of yours?
Yes.
Why is that so important to you?
Because I think the public holds the keys to the kingdom as far as keeping the water clean. They can make it or break it, and it depends on their attitudes towards it, their behaviors, their actions. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of actions that the public perpetuates that they may not realize are detrimental to the creeks.
Right, and we're going to get there. I want to jump over to Tim so people can hear your mellifluous voice. Tell us a little bit about your background, Tim.
All right. I came up to Alaska in the 1970s. I went to school at the University in Fairbanks and graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Resource Management and started working for DEC in 1995 with their underground storage tank program and moved over to the non-point source program in year 2000. And my main task there is to work on high-priority waters within the state, and my main focus is here in Anchorage, Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak, and Western Alaska.
Mm-hmm. So really, you are two savvy water scientists. I also wanted to invite you both to describe what's going on in Anchorage. I alluded to it that we actually don't send our stormwater through any kind of treatment. It just goes right down the drain, so to speak. Why is that an issue? And jump in, either one of you.
Well, I would just like to say that I think it's one of the least understood and known facts about the runoff in our city, which includes breakup, precipitation, car washing, overwatering your lawn.
Even moving snow around and then where it melts as the
people
as it
put
warms
snow
up.
In creeks. They think snow comes down on the ground, so they plow it into the creeks, and it carries all sorts of chemicals and road salts and aggregate in it. So the one, I think, really important message is for people to understand those storm drains that they see, that our water is going down, takes everything that's on the ground with it. So, what's on the ground washes down, goes directly into our creeks, except with a few exceptions, with a few oil and grit separators, untreated. The water does not go to the Asplund treatment plant where our sewage goes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important distinction.
I don't think
that
most
is a
people,
big distinction. Yeah. Most people think it goes to the sanitary sewer, and it doesn't. And we are a fairly modern city, and most modern cities have separated their sewers from their stormwater. They found it's cheaper to run both separate systems than to combine one, especially during flood events or high water events. Your septic systems just get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So by having the separate systems, you don't have that costly expense of trying to treat just
there's
vast
not much
amounts
more,
of water.
Much more treatment going on with sewage than there would be with
stormwater.
That's correct,
yes.
Correct. Okay. And so that's kind of the baseline. That's the issue. Anchorage is not really out of line with other modern cities. It did it mostly maybe for it was a prudent thing because to send it all through sewage treatment really is unnecessary. On the other hand, the city has not taken the step of adding some kind of filtering or cleaning of storm water. And is that a huge expense?
It is. Those inline systems or best management practices can be very expensive to operate, to install and operate.
Mm-hmm. And, does Seattle do it? I mean, can you compare us to some other cities?
Seattle's a dual system.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know another city. Tim might.
I can't think of right off the top of my head which ones are dual system versus a combined system.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of like a city like us, like Spokane, but we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
So then why is that a problem? Of course, we said anything that's in the street ends up in the sewer, and that, I guess I would like to break that down for people a little bit because you think, okay, it rains, stuff just ends up down there. That can be everything from garbage to chemicals to soil, right? And mm-hmm. That was one of the things reading some of the background I read, Sherry, was I didn't realize that turbidity, that's a term, and sedimentation is such a bad thing.
And it's really associated a lot with construction. That's the permitting to allow us to carry our water into the creeks. Much of it has to do with stormwater compliance through construction. And there are certain rules that the contractors and developers have to follow as far as keeping exposed ground and covering it up. But the sedimentation, the turbidity impacts the fish. It can kill them. It impacts the macroinvertebrates, which they eat, makes the water cloudy, which really doesn't have too much of an impact on a human. Although fecal coliform bacteria can adhere to sediment. So fecal coliform, also known as stuff coming from dog poop and other feces sources, if there is a lot of sediment, it can bind with it. So it may keep it suspended in places where we don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. The turbidities are fairly common pollutant for urban areas. When you have a lot of paved streets where you sand them, especially in the northern environments where you sand them, the milling of the material they put down makes it really fine. So even your oil grit separators that the municipality has installed isn't capable of picking up that real fine material that gives your water that turbid or milky look. And you see that real common in urban streams. And the city, with their street sweeping program, is helping to make sure that doesn't happen, but still it gets fined so fine that even the best management practices aren't able to pick it up or pull it out of the water column.
So when you see the city with those cute little things that go down the sidewalks and clean it up, that's not just for the pedestrians. That's actually for water quality then.
It is.
In addition.
And air quality as well.
And air quality, yeah. So I think we should, I was going to ask Tim to just kind of give the framework. We've got the EPA, we've got the state DEC, and then we've got the city. And just give us the framework for what the city kind of has to live up to for its discharge permit from the EPA.
Okay. Because Anchorage is above 100,000 people within a density of a certain, I think it's 10,000 people per square mile, it's required to have what they call an MS4 permit. And an MS4 is a municipal separate stormwater sewer system permit.
And very good.
and EPA originally oversaw that permit with the city. The state took on that responsibility a few years ago, and so the state oversees that permit now. And it requires the city to do certain things to make sure their stormwater is clean, so it meets state water quality standards before it gets discharged into the creeks. And that permit is renewed every 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And we that's been an ongoing thing. It's not new.
They're in their second term or second permit, yes.
Right, right. So I know I glanced through that, and it really pulls in the Anchorage Waterways Council, because you have a role there with them. It looks like a public education mm-hmm. role. So, and that gets into Poop the Scoop, and that gets into some. So why don't you tell us about that, Sherry?
Well, the permit is 55 pages and has so many parts to it, and the municipality, the Watershed Management Services, is such a small part of the municipality that they've had to contract out a lot of the aspects of it. And Anchorage Waterways Council was fortunate enough to get the education outreach program to try to bring some of this information to citizens. And we're starting our fourth year, and I'm starting to think that one of the biggest messages, besides the fact that the water goes down the storm drains untreated into our creeks where we recreate, is the dog poop problem. There's estimated to be about 75,000 dogs in Anchorage that poop on an average of 2 pounds a day, or, you know, some figure.
Yeah.
Ultimately comes out to about 10 tons of dog poop a day.
Yikes.
In the city.
Yeah.
And the dog poop contains a lot of fecal material, fecal coliform bacteria, which is one of the pollutants that we look at. Anchorage has 8 streams and 3 lakes that are impaired because they're not meeting the water quality standards for bacteria. And we think dog fecal material may be a big source of that that's making its way to the streams.
Right, and of course we have dog parks. I saw the list of the creeks, and it's like, oh, here it is right here. These are the impaired, I think this is out of the discharge report. It's like Lake Hood, Spinard Lake, fecal coliform and dissolved oxygen. We'll talk about dissolved oxygen. Then Ship Creek, fecal coliform, petroleum products. And then you've got Campbell Creek, Campbell Lake, Chester Creek, University Lake, Westchester Lagoon, Little Rabbit Creek, Fish Creek, Furrow Creek, Little Campbell Creek, Little Survival Creek, and Jewel Lake, all with fecal coliform in them. And so that means they get an impaired status.
Right, for not meeting the water quality standards, correct.
Does that mean you can't go in that water? Or is it, swimmer beware,
I think swimmer beware, and I sure wouldn't drink it.
Yeah, it's more of a drinking water impairment than it is a recreational impairment, although some of the streams did have bacteria of high enough levels that it would be an impairment of the recreational standard as well.
And is that a constantly changing situation?
Bacteria is kind of a different parameter. If you sample one day, you might get a value, say it's 50. Then you go out the next day, it may be 200 or it may be 0. It varies considerably, especially with flow.
Uh-huh.
Whereas other parameters like metals are pretty more consistent in the levels you find.
Right. Okay. So that's the reason, I guess, that it's important to constantly be testing. And then you watch over time if those numbers are trending up. Hopefully down. I thought it would be kind of fun to talk a little bit about a very popular region. I bike home along Chester Creek, and I get on around UAA and Goose Lake and bike all the way over to Westchester Lagoon. And so the other day when Sherry and I met to talk about this, you were telling me the fecal coliform count in University Lake is one thing, and then you move on down the stream, and then it gets bad in certain areas, and then by the time you get to Westchester Lagoon, what's going on? And I just sort of thought, we can picture this. So what's going on in the water there?
Well, again, if we go back to when I said that the fecal coliform can often bind to sediment, if you have slower running water, like you have University Lake, but you also have a dog park there,
yes,
that is at the downhill. So you've got some issues there. Then the water comes out of University Lake right over here on Bregaw. And we get relatively low fecal counts in the running water, but we think a lot of it's settling in the lake. And then again, Westchester, where you were windsurfing, has high counts in the lagoon, but where it exits in that new area that they've sort of retrofitted, it's not as bad, but it tends to be in the slower water and where there is more sediment. And I think if you went in there and kicked it up, or took a core or something, you'd really probably find some big numbers.
Another reason you might find more fecal coliform or bacteria in the lake systems is they come from waterfowl as well. And we see our lakes have a lot of waterfowl that visit them throughout the year, especially in the spring and the fall as they migrate back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so some of that, it's just nature in action. But you add the urban runoff,
right,
and you probably tip the scales to a
certain degree. Right. And there's some other possibilities. You know, you can have failed septic systems that could be leaching into your streams, too, and they can add quite a bit of fecal material or bacteria.
Mm-hmm. We think Eagle River may be, we test way up at the Eagle River Nature Center, and it's quite pristine, but down by the bridge at Mile 5, it's quite high. And our thought is that there may be a lot of septic tank issues along Eagle River that are causing the high fecal counts. You know, it's not really densely settled along there, but septic systems, as Tim said, are really important. And people should be maintaining them every 5 to 10 years, and most people don't. They just kind of let them go until
Well, 5 or 10 years can go roll by really fast, and you're thinking, no, it can't be time again to do that. Yeah.
Well, I think actually Anchorage, the municipality, has an ordinance that requests that you pump it every other year.
Wow.
Yeah, so they should be serviced more than every 4 or 5 years. And that extends the life of the septic system, so it's worthwhile to do that.
Yeah.
But is it being enforced? Enforced.
Yeah.
Well, I was also thinking about, you know, we've got horses on the hillside. We've got a zoo out there. I mean, we might have other animal things that I don't even know about. Those are probably, I mean, are they regulated a little differently, or what's the story there?
Well, the zoo is an issue, I think, because Little Campbell Creek runs through it, and it, again, it V's down from the ground. We're not testing anything right in that area, so sometimes below there it has, actually there was ARRI did some testing, and it wasn't too bad, and there may be some reasons why it is, you know, not so bad in some areas. I think it was lower down. It was around Abbott. It was quite high. And they, well, Tim can speak to the DNA testing that they did because they wanted to separate out who the culprits were, I think.
Oh.
Getting back to the zoo, I think the zoo over time has moved some of the creek out of some of the pens for the animals, so they're not having full access to it. That may help reduce the number of fecal bacteria getting into the water. Sherry mentioned the fact that we did a study here a few years back with a contractor that looked at what they call microbial source tracking. It's able to tell each bacteria has a marker from the host that it comes from. So they're able to differentiate whether the bacteria they're finding was coming from waterfowl, humans, dogs, or horses. And we found a lot of waterfowl bacteria. We found some horses, we found some dogs, and we even found some human bacteria in there too. So it's coming from all sources.
Okay. But we didn't say, by the way, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the recreational waters in and around Anchorage. And we have Sherry Northen from the Anchorage Waterways Council and Tim Stevens from the DEC. And we invite your questions. If you've seen things in the creeks that you're curious about, or if you want to know how you can get involved, these folks are the right people to talk to. You can give us a call at 550-8433 or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. There was something I found that Sherry talked to me about, which was report cards on the creeks. And these recently went out to community councils. Am I right?
Right. About that? They just went this last month.
And so this was testing that was done in the summer of 2012.
Right. It wasn't really testing in respect, because we do the water quality monitoring, which is more scientific, but this was more a visual observation survey where we had citizens who were interested to walk areas of the creek and look for invasive plants, orange phlox, so some scientific issues in the creeks. They weren't actually taking measurements, but also the aesthetics, trash, dog poop areas, and I hate to say it, but one of the things, creeks seem to be a huge attractant for large pieces of trash. We've pulled refrigerators from them. Bicycles are very common. People steal bicycles and then throw them in a creek or a lake. Shopping carts. I pulled a home entertainment center out of one once. TV, right. A hockey game. hard to understand. I don't understand the mentality, but it, you know, I think it's like people who like to push things off cliffs and watch them, you know.
They, yeah.
That's
By the way,
think.
We should actually remind folks about the, go ahead, and the creek cleanup.
Creek cleanup is this Saturday, and hoping the weather holds out, but from 9 to 12, we have 9 stations where people can go pick up those great bags that BP provides, and the waste management company picks them up, or both of them actually do. We provide gloves and safety information and information just about creeks. So there are certain things we don't want people to pick up that they may not know better. Some of the woody debris in the creek is actually good habitat. So just because you see a small log or something, don't take it out.
You don't have to take that out.
Yeah. So we're trying to educate people on what to take out, and then we will have a celebration afterwards at Cuddy Park, which is always been at Valley of the Moon. This is our 29th year for doing this, and this year it will be at Cuddy Park.
New location.
For the party.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know, do people, can they say, oh, I want to clean up this stretch of Chester Creek, or I want to, or how do they sort of get oriented to this?
Well, they can go to our website, which is anchoragecreeks.org, and we have a team sign up. A lot of people like to have teams. They get their company teams or Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts. And we also have the 9 supply locations on there on a map. And so between 9 and 12, they can show up and get their supplies. They need to sign in. We need it for liability. But they will also get a wristband, which will give them a discount at a food truck rally at the celebration. Mm-hmm. There'll be music, and it will allow them to enter into drawings. We have train tickets. We have rafting tickets, all sorts of cool things, but they have to show, demonstrate that they did go out and do something in the creek, but they can take their supplies anywhere they want.
Do you do a sort of like total amount of stuff? Those are always sometimes amazing numbers, you know.
It used to be easier because the municipality and the waste companies would come around on Saturday and pick everything up that was out and then take it back and weigh it on their scale so we could say we pulled out 8 tons or 10 tons. And now I think budget cuts means that they're picking it up as they do their routes. So if it's a Tuesday route through the neighborhood, they'll pick them up. But one of the things that happens is that the yellow bags are like a magnet. So you pull 3 bags of trash and leave them somewhere, and then the next day you go by and there's a couch and several other things there. So we know it didn't come out of the creek. And we try to deal with it, but it's cumbersome for us and for the poor people picking it up.
How many years have you been cleaning up the creeks?
This will be 29.
29 years.
Yeah.
Wow. My daughter wasn't even born when it started. I remember through her elementary school, we did some creek cleanup. So I guess you get schools, you get businesses, you get all different kinds of
people. And we try to do it before school is out. One year we did it when school had already gone out, and it really... teachers use it for extra credit. I mean, there are all sorts of great carrots out there for them.
Yeah.
And this year, I'm glad it's a little later because of the ice. We're really concerned. There are a lot of ice shelves out there, and the safety factor. Chester's quite clear, but Campbell and Little Campbell still have a lot of ice on them, and we don't want anybody getting hurt.
Right. I have a question. I bike home and go through the Valley of the Moon Park, and the street, it must be E Street, that there's a tunnel underneath there. And this year, even in the fall, it was overflowing and frozen, and I don't remember that from past years. Do you have any idea what that's related to?
This was a very strange fall as far as weather. We had extremely cold temperatures. We didn't really have the precipitation and the snow, but a lot of cold, and then we did get some precipitation and a lot of the windstorm brought a lot of trees down.
That was a huge...
caused a lot of flooding, diversions of the creek, and we're still... Now that the snow's gone, we're going out and trying to see what kind of damage. Some whole oxbows were actually cut off of creeks.
What's an oxbow?
An oxbow is like a big meander.
Okay.
So the creek said, I'm not going up that meander, like a like on a bobby pin or a hairpin or something, we're just going to cut straight across. So suddenly they're isolated, and you can find a lot of those right now. Plus big trees down, people calling, their yards are flooding because trees have come down, and they're in Chester Creek. And
still living with that windstorm from September.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little break. I'm here with Sherry Northen from the Anchorage Waterways Council and Tim Stevens from the DEC. My name's Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. We're on the brink of summer, and we're hoping for long sunny days, and we want to go out and play. So we wanted to talk about what is the quality of our recreational waters in and around Anchorage, and even a little farther. We can stretch down to one of our favorite playgrounds, which is the Kenai, or up to the valley. In the studio with me today to talk about how healthy is our water, our recreational water. I'm not talking about drinking things out of the faucet. I'm talking about playing in Goose Lake and Campbell Lake and all those places we like to be. We have Sherry Northen from the Anchorage Waterways Council, a 30-year nonprofit volunteer, well, some staff, but very, it's just a kind of people who care about the quality of water. And we have Tim Stevens from the DEC, and you are an environmental
program specialist.
There you go. Okay, so I thought we'd come back. We've had really a free-ranging discussion, and actually, we've got a caller, so why don't we go ahead and invite Susan. Hello, Susan. You're talking to Hometown Alaska.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to expand the conversation about recreational waters and also the potential of different kind of pollution in our waters, and this relates to I want your listeners to know that Alaska Wet Dog Race is scheduled to take place starting May 1st of this next year, 2014. This is a race of 1,000 jet skis, skiers, starting in Whittier and ending up in Iliamna, 2,000 miles, 1,000 racers. Those of us who are concerned about it certainly are one of the concerns, not only the impacts to wildlife, but clearly the impacts of petroleum products in the water. While there are checkpoints at which the skiers are to get their fuel, they will have to refuel in between the checkpoints.
So is your concern the volume of people or spills from gasoline? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we'd be in the inlet here.
It won't be in the inlet.
No, it won't be in the inlet.
No. So it'll start in, it'll be Prince William Sound and then Cook, well, it will be Cook Inlet lower down.
Mm-hmm.
And then across and out into Bristol Bay.
So I don't know if my two guests know about this or not. Is there a permitting process that has already happened?
Correct. It was awarded about a year ago. The permit was authorized.
Mm-hmm.
So, the comment period is over. The appeal period is over. And it is scheduled to start this next year. There is and this is being billed as an international hardest, toughest go-get-em race in the world.
Is it a one-time deal?
No, clearly not. They hope to establish it as this, the iron dog of the waters,
mm-hmm.
as it were. There's the first prize is $1 million to each of the two members of the teams coming in, and plus substantial prizes for others. So
well,
there's a real concern that even though various, you know, they will have absorbent pads to pick up any spills, and they're supposed to remain in place if they can't clean up the spills. This is a race, and I think a lot of us are fairly skeptical about whether or not the precautions that the sponsors putting in place can be met.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know whether our two guests actually have, I mean, how would you, the thing about that occurs to me about this is we all have different ways of recreating and ways of wanting to enjoy ourselves. And I guess there's constantly a balancing act. I mean, it's hard to say my way or the highway, my way is the only way. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it's a done deal. We talked about absorbent pads. Is there anything else you guys would add to maybe things to look for, maybe ways to talk about to participants about? I don't know.
Well, I guess I can add the fact that where they're refueling, I imagine there's some precautions they need to take. There'll be people there probably to help monitor to make sure there's not any spills, and if there are, that they're addressed right away. Once they're underway, you know, all motorboats have some exhaust that have unburnt fuels, but the fact that you're out in the open ocean, it will dissipate rather quickly and shouldn't be a problem. The only problem where you might have a problem is where they congregate at the fueling areas or stop areas, and you could put in some rules potentially. I don't know. I haven't seen the permit and not aware of the race, but, you know, they don't idle for long periods of time. There are some things to do that can minimize that impact.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking we mentioned earlier that Lake Hood has issues. I mean, we people like to fly in Alaska. I mean, and we haven't outlawed that. But go ahead, Sherry. Did you want to jump in?
Well, the woman, Susan, did bring up wildlife, which I think
that's
and we're trying to keep belugas and salmon safe. And from kind of minor things, and I'm thinking all these jet skis, which are always kind of disruptive, can or will have an impact on wildlife, which is one of the areas in our purview, but I find it a bit disturbing. Personally,
I would just say if folks are interested in learning more about this, the Anchorage Science Pub this coming Sunday at 4 at the Taproot, we're doing a presentation on all aspects of it.
Well, thanks, Susan, and so that's good to get the word out for people who care about that. And so, thank you so much. All right. Got an email asking us, so where is it safe to swim?
Well, let's see. Jewel Lake, up to a few years ago, was an impaired water, but there were some BMPs put in place.
Best management practices.
I'm sorry. Best management practices were put in place. Sewer was extended to the full neighborhood. So there isn't any on-site septics out in the area anymore. And we did some testing of the water through the Anchorage Waterways Council and found that the water now meets water quality standards. So we delisted that water. So that's a clean lake to swim in. Not University Lake, the one, Goose Lake.
Goose Lake, yeah.
We've never had a problem with that we know of, and I believe the city monitors that beach at least twice a month sampling, and we've never got any information that it's not meeting state water quality standards there.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, this one of the things Sherry and I talked about in advance was a question I had about, I've heard of swimmer's itch, and I know I've read stories in the paper, you know, kids come down with rashes, and is that serious? And I believe it was Goose Lake, so if they've not, you know, broken water quality standards there. What's a mother to think about here? About she's got her kids out there in the water.
I did talk to my husband about it, who's a wildlife biologist, and apparently there are a little parasites, I believe, that are commonly found in ducks. They call it duck itch.
Right. It's a parasite that has two different life stages, and one life stage is in waterfowl, and another one is in snails. And the human host gets in between them when they're swimming, and they attach to the human, the larva.
So
you get out and you're very itchy, and right. I think within a day or two, it
starts to see signs of it. Yeah, and it takes about a week. Some things you can do, you can avoid areas that you know where there's swimmer's itch, and if you're in waters that you don't know, as soon as you come out, dry off with a towel, so the water doesn't sit on you, and the larva then has time to burrow into your skin,
penetrate,
or rinse down if you can. Take a shower. I know I spent time in Fairbanks swimming in the gravel pits and caught it a few times. We used to take a gallon jug of water and just rinse off after you got off.
Okay.
With tap water.
Okay, so that's not an indication of something really serious and horrible happening to you.
Probably it's a natural
annoying.
Occurrence.
Annoying and unpleasant, yeah.
But you talk to people who've lived here, and they say they've had it since the 70s, every time they swam somewhere. Yeah. Some lakes it seems to be more prevalent in now, but it's sort of a naturally occurring phenomenon, right. I think.
Okay. Well, that's kind of good to clear up, because that's one of those common concerns, I think.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about water quality in our recreational areas here in Anchorage and Kenai and up in the valley. Really, we're so ready to go out and play at this time of year. And so, you know, what's the status of our water? How healthy is it? We have Sherry Northen from the Anchorage Waterways Council with us, and Tim Stevens from the DEC. And might throw out a reminder on the creek cleanup again, just because.
Right, this Saturday, May 18th, from 9 to noon, go to Anchorage Waterways Council's website and find out where the locations for supplies are, and then a great celebration afterwards with music and fantastic drawing prizes and food.
And it's at the Cuddy Park.
Cuddy Park this year.
Not the Valley of the Moon. Okay. You know, reading the creek reports, which right now are not on your website, I don't think.
Not yet.
But that's a goal. And we talked about those the first half hour. They're more visual, aesthetics, trash. It's not really a scientific testing process. It's more like eyes on the creek. What do you see?
Right.
And those were really illuminating. One of them that I read was Fish Creek. And it was pretty charming to read about Fish Creek in 1916, having actually salmon swimming up it. And I think the report says now that there are some trout there, but there's no more salmon. And really, it happened in the 50s. A lot of change happened with a lot of development then. Mm-hmm. But I believe I read in that report card that some community council folks are sort of curious about resurfacing it, or, you know, bringing it back.
Daylighting it.
And have we done that with any creeks here before? And, does the Waterways Council know much about that?
Cuddy is part of Fish Creek that has been daylighted. And as you know, during the winter, it's become a great duck park.
Correct, yes.
And that's a slight issue. You can take your kids down there to see the ducks, and then people feed them the bread, which are it's not really the best diet for them, but it attracts them. And the ducks can overwinter here, but they get very congregated as the lake there freezes up, and then they're smaller and smaller, and there are more and more ducks. And we were out there doing some testing in the winter, and it is high, probably bird, just totally bird feces.
Definitely not a place you want to swim.
Probably not.
Nor fall in. The cameraman just said that he dropped his camera. He had a waterproof camera he dropped down. It was just really, really murky.
So sometimes we love things to death, I guess.
Yeah.
It's
a hard thing when you're a parent. Your kids want to go see the ducks, and they
want to have an interaction with wildlife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to add that the quality of life, I think, in Anchorage, having come from California, the creeks, the wildlife, and everything are really, really important. And I think that's why I enjoy living here so much, and a lot of people do. And they reported that in the creek report cards. That's one of the reasons, plus the studies that have been done in Anchorage in 2020 and other things that studied wildlife and the outdoor aspects. I mean, right outside your door, you can ski to work or ride your bike to work, or you've got your creeks there, you can canoe down or raft, you know, in the evening. And I think the Waterways Council, our goal is to help maintain the quality of them, which is not too bad. But also, you know, I think people should think about, what if we were to go away? Budgets are getting tighter for agencies, and we are doing this on our own funding when we can find it through foundations and through some federal agencies, state agencies, municipal. But what if we went away? Who's going to be there to speak out for the Creeks?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I want to throw out our phone numbers again for our listeners. And if you've got questions about what you've seen on the Creeks or whether you've had an experience and you're wondering what it was about or saw something, these folks are the right people to ask. So it's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. Or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I was thinking about the Creek reports, and there was one for the downtown Ship Creek, which is really a place where you can catch salmon right doorsteps from your hotel. And can you talk a little bit about that one? I do have it with me, Sherry, if it's not right in front of you. But there were some issues there on that creek.
Well, actually, on Monday night, Tom, who worked on the report, and I went to Mountain View Community Council to give the report. And there's going to be some development going on down at Ship Creek. There are several scenarios that are happening. And so they're trying to narrow that down. So the council was really interested in that, as well as the quality of it. The businesses, they realize it's very industrial along the area, which is where we had the hydrocarbon and some other types of impairments. Tim told me earlier today that the list that I gave you, a few of the things have come off the impaired list. So there are some successes here. And that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And he could probably speak better to that. It still has fecal coliform impairment and a lot of bank trampling. And people don't think about bank trampling, but that leads to high sediment rates. When it rains, we have more water going down. The bank has lost its vegetation. And fishermen, you know, kind of trample banks, mm-hmm. not intentionally, but mm-hmm. so that can lead to building decks and platforms and places for them. And I think that's what they're trying to do down there is to turn it into a place that impacts the creek less mm-hmm. by fishermen and people out there.
Huh.
That's correct. Yeah, I understand they are putting in some walkways, and they have done some stream bank restoration work down there to try to stabilize some of the banks that do get trampled or have unraveled over time. As far as the impairment, Sherry's correct. We, in the 2012 integrated report we give to EPA, we have delisted the Ship Creek for petroleum. It was impaired for petroleum for sheening. And in the last couple of years, we had a contractor out there taking samples and doing some observations. And we found that it now meets our water quality standards for petroleum. So that's another one of our success stories.
That's great. That's great to hear. Yeah. So, let's talk about the successes, because one of the things I hate doing is having a show where the sky is falling. We haven't done that because really we've talked about the quality of our water is really pretty good here. But I like to tell people about what's gone right, you know, that it's not an inevitable slide downhill. So let's talk about some of those successes.
Well, in the Anchorage Bowl, we've taken Jewel Lake off. We mentioned that for fecal coliform. We've taken petroleum off as an impairment for Ship Creek, and we've also taken off Lakes Hood and Spinard for bacteria as well.
Okay. That has gasoline in it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, actually, no. It has it's still impaired for dissolved oxygen, or they call it dissolved gases, and they are doing work on that to try to improve that aspect of the DO and their dissolved oxygen.
Uh-huh. Okay. I want to talk about dissolved oxygen. I want to just a caller or an email a person is interested in where they can pick up their cleanup. They're cluing into this creek cleanup and they want to know.
Okay. AnchorageCreeks.org. Anchorage Creeks, one word with an S like Sam on the end of it, .org. Go to our website. It has a map, Google Earth map, and it shows exactly where all the locations are, and it has contact information from our creek cleanup coordinator, Matt Kays.
Okay.
529-9289 if you want to call him now.
Yeah. That's great. And we do have a link to your website on alaskapublic.org. And we also actually included a 2012 talk you gave, Sherry, just kind of a status report. And it includes a lot of pictures of drains. I think you were really making the point that everything that goes into the street goes down the drain. And so we looked, there's lots of pictures. That video is on there. There was another interesting one that I think might be good to bring up is this the public health issue of cigarette butts, which end up being pretty ubiquitous around even recreational areas and trailheads and things like that. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because that was some surprising public health information, the effect on water of some of these cigarette filters.
It was. I started looking into that when I was looking into marine debris when we were preparing for our annual meeting. And there's a fellow, Dr. Thomas Novotny, down in San Diego State University, who has been studying this and has a nonprofit organization to, in California, a lot of the beaches, people lay on the beach and then they put their cigarettes out on the sand. And so they have cans out there, you know, put your butt here. But he's been doing studies where they would take the filter from one cigarette and put it in a few milliliters of water and put either marine or freshwater fish in it, and it will kill it. So when all these cigarette butts that you see by storm drains go flooding down there, they're going into the creek, and actually the carcinogens that are caught in the cigarette filter are breaking out. Plus the fish eat them. They go by and they think, oh, there's some good
that
piece
might
of
be food.
Food.
Yeah. Fish and wildlife eat them, yeah.
And what, birds.
Yeah. And people just, it's such a small thing. You can flick it out. I think that Dr. Novotny had an image of a traffic light and the side of the road and just littered with it. I'm going to welcome a caller onto the show. Hello, Catherine.
Hello there.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you so much. You're talking about one of my favorite subjects, but one of my biggest concerns also. We are bicyclers, and you were just talking about Ship Creek, and you're talking about things that, you know, down toward the mouth and looking at it and so forth. Up at Viking Drive, there's a big bend in the creek, and they've already had to move the bicycle trail once because it was undermined by the water. And now it is just collapsing in and getting close to the part that they put in a new bicycle trail. And my understanding from our assemblyman was, and the railroad, that it was the Anchorage Waterways that had to address this.
No. Thank God.
Who has to address this?
It's in a municipality. The municipality, Parks and Rec, is in charge of trails in the municipality. And a woman named Lori Skanky, we don't build them. We don't have the money. And you know what? The rivers are just doing what they do naturally, which is meander.
down in Haley, Ketchum, Idaho, they have a place, what they call Boxcar Bend, where they had to, I mean, they actually dumped boxcars, railroad boxcars there to stop the erosion. And I
kind of unsightly.
Someone who worked at the railroad, and I said, you know, can't you do something about this? And they said, oh, no, that's Anchorage Waterways.
Thanks.
And now you're telling me it's a municipality.
We have a very small budget. We have, as Kathleen said, of just a couple staff, and we don't do the trails, although we go out and look at them.
Yeah, you walk along them.
This is more river erosion, and you're just letting it do its natural thing, is what
Yeah, that's pretty common when you try to confine a river, especially down in the lower reaches. It does want to meander. That's how it dissipates its energy. So when you confine it, it starts to work against whatever improvements you have in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, nobody's confined it. It's just doing its natural thing, but it's...
It is, and I'm sorry that we're getting the blame for it.
Yeah, that's not what the Anchorage Waterways Council does. All right. Well, thanks, Catherine. I really appreciate you calling.
Thanks for the perspective. You know, it's something for us to think. We never know what our reputation's like out there.
Yeah, or what people say you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim.
I just wanted to get back to our success stories.
One
of the ones that the Anchorage adopted early was its setback program. Most of the streams around Anchorage have a 25-foot setback, a riparian zone setback, which is really helps the creeks stay clean. And it's only 25 feet. We wish it was longer, but a lot of cities don't have any at all.
Right.
So the fact that we do have a setback is important.
Right. That was one of the Title 21 issues. I think they tried to bring it to 50 feet setbacks, but that did not,
I believe it did not make it.
But we can feel good about the 25% at any rate. I wanted to talk about homeowners and yard clipping, because at least some people might think that's organic. Why not let that go down the creek. So let's talk about some of those things that your average citizen might not realize.
Well, it seems perfectly logical that you're cutting lawn or trees, and they are vegetation, and it is grass. It's not something unnatural, although lawns aren't a native vegetation up here. But a lot of people, and this ties into the setback that Tim mentioned, is we see people who have their lawns going, if they live along a creek, they may have their lawns growing right up to the edge. So they're mowing up to the edge, and they're also fertilizing right up to the edge of the stream bank. So all that's going to run off through watering and rain. But then there are people who just have a stream kind of maybe behind their fence. And we've walked Chester Creek, and we've seen all the big hanging baskets that people buy, you know, to make their houses look great for the summer, tossed over the back fence. So you're throwing invasives in the water, pots of soil, and then the grass clippings, which deplete the dissolved oxygen because they decay, and then lower the dissolved oxygen level, which impacts the fish that need a higher oxygen level.
Right. And so, we do love our fish.
Yeah. But it seems it just doesn't seem like an unnatural thing to do. And I think it's all education and understanding that it really is a poor practice.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to add, you know, Sherry mentioned the fertilizer. One thing homeowners can do is when they fertilize, apply what's suggested, and make sure it just sticks to your lawn. Don't fertilize your driveway or your sidewalk, and then don't follow up by watering your sidewalk and your driveway. Just water the lawn. Make sure you don't overwater so that it's
running down the street.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing you see a lot in Anchorage is these adorable kids, high school kids, having car washes, and you know it's a fundraiser. It's their energy. They're out there. They've got a cause. Is there something we can tell them? I mean, besides don't do that.
We were talking about that just before the show. Anchorage Waterways Council sent out over 200 letters to social groups and churches trying to get them to at least use better management practices in this. You can put a sump pump out and pump the soapy water or the runoff from the car wash onto a grassy area. But often they take place like on a paved parking lot. And the water just runs down right into a storm drain. So it's educating them about that. Car washes the automatic ones are better because they recycle the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes through the sewer treatment plant. It does not go into the creeks. But it's also expensive, and we understand that. And, you know, like Tim and I were talking, you don't want to take away. It's like taking the duck feeding from the little kids, and, you know, these kids need
some
to
of the pleasures, actually.
Yeah, they're trying to raise money, and I've noticed in the lower 48 that some car wash companies, and this is something that I would like to pursue, will provide discount car wash tickets to groups, and they can go out and sell it maybe half price and make money that way and then save our creeks by not washing cars.
Mm-hmm. That's a real good point, Sherry. And another thing they can do is use material or detergents that are more green and more friendly to the water.
Okay.
So they don't use, you know, their end result is they don't impact the water as much as some more environmentally friendly products.
So look for green products,
right.
And maybe think of a sump pump, and maybe think about doing it on grass.
Grass or gravel.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to remind folks of the creek cleanup on the May 18th. And I'd like to thank very much Sherry Northen and Tim Stevens for joining us today and sharing lots of information about quality of our recreational water. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join me to talk about gardening and growing food, not just growing flowers, but growing food. We'll have guests from the Alaska Permaculture Guild and the Cooperative Extension. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.